That'll do.
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
The team keeping an eye on our games. It just shows how big we're growing.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Brian O'Driscoll
on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
You're welcome along. Very happy to say we are joined by Brian O'Driscoll to discuss Ireland 29, New Zealand 20. Good evening.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. I think I know where you want to start. And can I just say, I agree. I also think Ireland will win the World Cup.
If only there was a World Cup every 2 years, we'd be right in the hunt. Yeah, it's... listen, it's hard not to be very excited again. You know, we find ourselves in a similar position, but yet I think, you know, we're wiser to it now. We're, you know, we're giddy for the moment for this week, but I think the realization is that the next, what happens in the next 2 years and that evolution process, whatever comes of it, will need to happen for them to stay consistent and stay at the standard that they have set now over the course of the last few weeks. So it's very, very promising, but you listen, we took an eternity to beat New Zealand, over a century, and now we've beaten them 3 times in the last 5 years, and we're even getting credibility in their media. So we must be doing something right. So it is exciting to watch it. And, you know, I was at the game with my little fella for the first time. His first game, he thinks, you know, again, like some other kids around the country, that we just beat New Zealand more often than we don't. And you know, his dad has lived the other side of that. So it is, you know, I looked at it and you see a certain amount during the game, but then you have to really see the detail when you come back. And I'd have to say, I think it's the most complete Irish performance I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I can't think of another one that was as high octane, had so much skill, defensively brilliant with its intent, but its organization. Only one key error of note, which cost a try. The other try, I don't think you can defend that. That's just brilliant play. So in all, yeah, there's a few penalties given away, and we got a little bit of rub of the green here and there, as did they on one or two occasions. But I just thought on the overall context of the 80 minutes, we were brutally unlucky to be 10-5 down at halftime, and could easily, on possession territory and chances created, have won by 15 or 20. And I think everyone, including the New Zealanders, would agree with that.
On your point, and by the way, I feel I should state this for, you know, just for the record, the World Cup line was a joke. Don't play this back.
No, I'm aware of that, yeah. Joe.
No, I know you're aware of that, but trust me.
It's always good that you have to explain gags.
Yeah. On the point, though, about the peak, it was really striking. So you compare this to 18, when after the Grand Slam win and the Tour of Australia, beating the All Blacks in Dublin felt like climbing the mountain. It was, my God, number one in the world. It was not the end of the journey, but it felt a little bit like that. You contrast the mood, I would say, post-18, which was just jubilant and what harm in it. But you contrast that mood with the mood immediately post-match on Saturday. And, for instance, Johnny Sexton straight away, this can't be the peak. This is only the start. That was the exact tone of his comments. And even the younger players, Hugo Keenan, this is just the start. Jack Conan, we can't let winning make us soft. It can paper over the cracks. We left loads of points out there. We're not as good as people are saying. We need to be better. There was a much, not routine, because beating the All Blacks is never going to be routine, but there was less jubilation and we've arrived and the journey is over vibe from the team, I would have said.
Yeah, you know, in so many cases, and you see it with teams winning trophies, it's in, you know, in a short period of time, a lot of it, you know, it's often about breaking the seal and the next one doesn't come as hard. And that has been true to this case, where they haven't had to wait another 110 years after Chicago. They managed to do it a couple of years after that. And now, you know, 3 years after that again. You know, a good bit of that will be coming from the you know, senior players that have now won with Ireland 3 times. Some of them have won a 4th time with the Lions. So a lot of that is about the messaging. Some of these younger players who's, you know, it's for their first victory against the All Blacks. They have grown up as well. not expecting to win against the All Blacks. So it's a big deal for them. But yet, you know, the key messaging coming from the management is we've made this error in the past. We can't do it again. So let's just try and contain things a little bit. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not, you know, believe all the hype. Let's not let the country go bananas. You know, if they do, that's out of our control. But let's be contained, because all of the points they've made are true. You know, there were a huge amount of scores left out there. Like I said, the creation of opportunities was, you know, the biggest gold star for me. It was how often they had the All Black defense in trouble scrambling, how good their defense was. But even still, we got over the whitewash a couple of times, but, you know, either got held up or double movement, or, you know, just beaten to a bouncing ball. So there was so many different aspects to the performance to be positive about. But yet, you know, if you start thinking that you're chocolate, you know, you'll start melting. You will. Yeah. And they have to think, they have to remember the pain of 4 years ago in this cycle of thinking that they were the business. I'm not saying they were, firstly, but maybe believing a bit of that hype and going, well, maybe we are as good as everyone says. And then just that was their peak. So I can understand why that messaging is coming as it is, because in their heads as well, they're trying to tell themselves they can't have this as the peak, because this isn't the time to peak. In 2 years' time is.
No, and trips to Twickenham, Paris next year, and three matches in New Zealand would straighten you sitting up in your seat as well a touch.
Well, if you look at England, when they won the World Cup in 2003, they you know, had the disappointments. They went away to Ireland and won the Grand Slam in 2003, you know, in a Grand Slam game. They went to New Zealand that summer and played New Zealand and won with 13 men, all of those things. And so to the next big, I know they won't look beyond the Six Nations, but a three-test tour down to New Zealand, to pick off one of those would be something.
Yeah.
That would be a real step in the right direction, because two of the three victories have been in reality at the end of New Zealand's season. And this is not to take anything away from the players, because they played magnificently. But in other games, you know, particularly the World Cup, it felt as though, you know, they had just built up to that moment, whereas they're coming down the other end of their season. They've been in camp a long time. So there are factors that they will be able to look to and point and go, well, that's why we're a little bit off. And yet we still only lost by 9 points. So I think we have to take all of that into account too. But it's, you know, it's massively positive. You know, we've talked over the last couple of years a lot about where is this Irish team going and what the shape is. And I really thought that a lot of the messages from Johnny and from other players was just the backing of a coach, being honest. But we couldn't really see where the development of the game was going. And then it all of a sudden clicked against England. We were wondering whether it was a once-off. But thankfully, it's not. It's in the, you know, whatever about the summer games, but against Japan, that shape, and then again against arguably the best team in the world. Well, certainly they were the number one ranked team in the world before the weekend. To be able to create that shape and win the collision zone the way they did and play the game they wanted to play is so positive and so exciting. And I think it's that has us all hyped. It's not just the manner of a victory. It's not just a victory. It's the manner of the victory and the play involved and the intricacies of it and the excitement of how much they tried to play wide and knew when to tuck it. And we've got this brilliant front row all of a sudden that maybe is the difference, that it was the missing link in the past. So all these pieces are beginning to come together, but a long road still to go.
Yeah. Were you somewhat surprised at how quickly this has all come together? The England game you mentioned, that England game came at the end of a very, very average Six Nations, where both the performances as well as the results were a little bit iffy. And okay, the England game happened, it was great and everything, and then Japan was a curious game. The extent to which they've backed it up with that performance, right from the first minute, where you saw, wow, this team means business, they're not going to regress in terms of their ambition here. Still, I found myself thinking, God, this has all come together very, very quickly.
But obviously, this has been a long time in building, and I just think it didn't quite click. And yeah, I think you do have to appreciate that the team doesn't have that much time together to put it all together, to put their shape together. So they will over the course. And that's why we do talk as ex-players and how current players say you do need time for coaches to bed in their philosophy. That's the reality of it. It's more difficult at international because you are only together for the Six Nations for a few weeks in the summer and then November internationals. And you don't get to work with players on a daily basis throughout the year where they're learning their skill set. So when you are trying to hone a particular game plan, you've got to really try and get it going immediately. Also, the other thing that the coach is worried about is winning games. So while you're trying to develop a game plan, you've got to find a way to also get the job done, to get the press off the back, get the public off your back if you're not winning. So it has felt like it's maybe finally clicked, or it's clicked very quickly, because I can't say that I saw the development of all of this shape coming in the build up to the England game. I'd be lying if I said I did. And I've analyzed the game the team an awful lot over the last 2 years, and I really couldn't understand specifically what they're trying to do. But maybe the penny has dropped now, or maybe there's just that next slight iteration on top of being collision winners, which they've done in the last three games. You start winning the collisions, you start dictating the game and what way you play it a little bit more, and then they're more comfortable with their shape. They've got nearly a full deck to choose from, so they're in a good spot at the moment. And now they're playing with high confidence, which is also a very, very aggressive weapon for them to have moving forward. It's just a matter of staying on top of that positivity and that confidence to bring it into Six Nations. Well, obviously next weekend, first of all, but then subsequently into the Six Nations.
Here is a clip of Andy Farrell. So he was asked about the key ingredients in that win.
Just being ourselves, doing what we said we'd do, and fully understanding how we was going to go about it, and trusting ourselves to play how we said we was going to play. That's it in a nutshell, really. I thought we was composed enough to not get distracted along the way to play the game that we wanted to play.
You kept going for tries, obviously, when other teams might have taken points. Is that based on what you have to do against the All Blacks, or is that the identity now?
It's something that we've done before, not just to the All Blacks, and won a game or two that way against them, but we've done it to other teams as well. The game's all about creating opportunities, and with that you also get a bit of field position, territory, etc. We created quite a bit of opportunity, certainly in the first half. Did we get the reward for it? We could have been better, a little bit more clinical, but the opportunities were being created, and it's allowed us to keep a hold of the game. The toughest thing in sport, certainly at the top level, is to be consistent. And when you're chasing something down, you've always got a goal in sight. And the hardest thing when you keep playing well is to keep getting better. And that's why we respect them so much. They've been at the top for so long, and everyone sees it as an opportunity to play against the best team in the world and test themselves. And they time and time again keep coming up with the goods. So the test for us has been, as what we've been talking about in the last couple of years is consistency of performance. And we've had a few good ones, and we need to back that performance up now with a good one next week.
And then just one other shorter clip. This is Ian Foster on what he made of Ireland.
Ireland play a very high retention game. They like to retain the ball and put your system under pressure. And we saw that again tonight. But there's certainly a desire to play with a little bit more ambition, I think, around that. So it's a little bit wider in how they're playing some of their phase stuff. And I think also on the counter-attack, there seems to be a little bit more ambition. So, but don't get me wrong, I thought that was a very, very good performance from Ireland, and probably the best performance I've come up against in my time. I thought they were pretty polished.
So that's quite the line. The best performance since he's become head coach that he's come up against, Brian. a million things which go into a performance like this, but the for me, as you know, watching without your expertise, clearly what just jumps out a mile, what's changed with this team? They only kicked the ball away 5% of the time. New Zealand kicked the ball more than Ireland, for instance, yesterday. Ireland with the ball in hand just look transformed. So what are they doing? What are they doing that suddenly, you know, I mean, you think of the, which try, it was Kelleher's try, even the, well, not to mention Lowe's even early on, but you think Kelleher's try, this was Ireland in possession just inside their own half. And it's, again, brilliant scintillating rugby to get all the way up and they go over from close range. Those kind of moments were very few and far between for a long time. So Ireland transformed with the ball in hand.
Yeah, well, their launch play was very, very good, incredibly accurate. The quality of the passing was out in front. I suppose if you take the Kelleher try, for example, you know, a dummy maul to try and keep them tied in close, first of all, but it was a six-man line out. You're using Caelan Doris as, you know, the ordinary 13 in that Brumbies play, you know, all plays. It's all played close enough to the line, but far enough away to not be able to be read through. I thought it was, on that one, Havili read very poorly and forced Ione to have to hit in on Doris, which immediately, if you get in that, the job is done. Johnny's around the corner and you know, Severi Reese, you know, has to hit in on him and all of a sudden you get an edge. Once you get an edge and in behind, the All Blacks or any other defence in the world is going to scramble a little bit. They're disorganised. You've got personnel not connected together. So ordinarily, the three-quarter line wants to defend together. Tight forwards want to defend together. All of a sudden, you've got front rowers coming out of a line-out maul and they're defending out on the wing. And then you get, you know, three of the backs turn up for big plays. Ringrose, you know, James Lowe nearly gets over, and then Bundy smashes one in before Kelleher does. So it really felt as though once that initial launch play was over, it didn't matter what number was on your back. It was just about aggressive ball carrying and being direct and being square. That was one of the things that I was so impressed with Ireland over the course of the 80 minutes, the squareness of their carries, about how direct, how north-south they were. They weren't trying to, you know, leaving themselves across the park or get to soft shoulders. They were direct hard, and no one better than Josh van der Fleer. I thought he was outstanding. He's a smaller guy, and so you could sometimes wonder whether he's going to be able to impact from a ball carrying perspective at international level. But the speed and the depth and the directness and the squareness of his carries gets him over the advantage line. And it's just an intent piece. That's all it is. It's in his head that I'm going to carry this at a million miles an hour. And sometimes he'll get absolutely opened up by a big collision. But more often than not at the weekend, he made a soft shoulder, got in behind, almost got a couple of offloads away. So that was one example. The quality of the passing, you know, it was a penalty advantage for the James Lowe try. I just thought, you know, it was lovely pass, good pass from Johnny. The pass from Bundiaki was absolutely magnificent. And it was a good 15-metre pass. But right out in front of Hugo Keenan, didn't have to check stride. He ran across a little bit, and I heard Tommy Bowe talking on, was he on Channel 4, talking about it. As a winger, he would have liked that early. I thought Hugo did brilliantly, because as soon as you throw that early, everyone then only has to worry about one guy. They just have to worry about James Lowe. Whereas while he's carrying it, he carried, sucks the defenders in to commit to him, throws the pass, and then it creates a one-on-one for James Lowe and gets in ahead of Jordy Barrett. So I just thought the accuracy of almost everything that Ireland did was really, really impressive. And that's on both sides of the ball. The accuracy of their defensive reads, the collision winning, Gary Ringrose, I think his best defensive display, even though it'll record that he might have had three or four misses, his defensive display was outstanding. The level of the impacts, the importance of them, the pressure, squeezing space to make sure that he was in the eye line of every New Zealander that had the ball to not allow them to play. Even James Lowe's, you know, game-defining potentially hit in on Ione to stop the ball and stop a potential try up the other end from a turnover. So all of these micro moments in the game added up to this overall excellent performance that we're glowing about. So yeah, it's lovely to have this conversation, Joe. It really is. You know, as an analyst, it's easier to, it actually is easier to scrutinize something negative, but it's much more pleasant to talk about something positive. And, you know, Ronan Keller knows the one error that he kind of made in the day was his read of not being able to keep an eye on where the ball was, but he was man marking or player watching, yeah, rather than identifying Papapili had the ball first of all, and he just left his tight head prop. That for me, like, it's the only error in it, real error in it. And yes, there's other one, I mean, kind of smaller errors, but that is the only thing in an 80-minute performance, and you just don't often see that from an Irish team. In fact, very rarely. So why not get excited and in this moment? Let's be excited for this week.
And we are right in saying, because it certainly looks like it, the Irish players are far more inclined to get their hands free and take a chance and throw a pass when a line break is made. They're not thinking about hitting the deck and let's concentrate on the next ruck. Although you would say the breakdown work's improved actually in recent times for sure. But there is that willingness when it's on, right, let's go. And everybody looks alive to it now. It's not a surprise anymore when somebody throws a pass out of a tackle.
No, it's not. It's they are playing heads up. They really are. There was an incident relatively early on in the game where they came from a line out on the right hand side, or a set piece, scrum or line out. They hit into the middle of the park, and then they were due to go again. And Doris identified that they were really short end, the blind side, and just held his width and called for a wide pass from Jameson Gibson Park. He stuck him a little bit on the inside shoulder, so he didn't allow him bounce on the outside. But that's pure heads-up rugby, just watching, seeing defence, what's happening in front of you. And if there isn't a mirror on personnel on either side of the ruck, if you're favoured one side or the other, well, that's the side you go. And that's why Johnny and Jameson, you know, are so good. They're able to identify bodies on the ground, you know, defenders in the defensive line. And sometimes it's about going the side that's loaded with more numbers, but you understand who the personnel are. If you've got four tight five on one side and a winger, and you've got some speed on that side, it's okay. You pick and choose, go that side. The other thing you mentioned about the speed of the ruck ball, at times they were winning rucks with one, two players. The accuracy around there, very few bodies going to dead rucks or rucks that were already won. And just one thing that I did notice, and you know, it's their ability to get into the shape, the pod off nine, hitting the middle guy, the pop in or out, but then having Johnny or Hugo or James Lowe in that pivot position behind the pullback. And then they have two more forwards outside. And a lot of the time they were going out the back of this in this game. They obviously felt as though they could stick them in midfield with the angles of running with Doris and Furlong, even when they were in that second pod. The speed and enthusiasm with which they ran, it was as if they were getting it every time. And you saw the angles that the New Zealand defenders were having to come in. And as soon as your shoulders are turned in and Johnny was picking those passes out the back, that's why they were getting the edge.
Well, you know, some things won't go out of fashion in rugby. And I remember speaking to you, I don't know how many years ago now, and you talked about the importance of animation on Doris and Furlong's part. If they're in that pod, and they don't look like they're not going to get the ball, intelligent players will read that and they'll have moved off already. Whereas you do see them back running with intent again and you know, hands in the air and looking like they're about to get the ball. And, you know, that maybe had slipped a touch as well.
Yeah, but the reality is you're never actually lined up as a decoy runner. That's not, if you think I'm a decoy, sure, it's all over.
You should be able to get it, of course, yeah.
You are a viable option every single time, because if you're not, it means you're not sticking the defence the way you should do. And the beauty is when you've got someone that can pick the pass like Johnny does, like he gets around the corner really well and then he interests first defender, he squares up a little bit, interests the first defender. And then if you have two guys coming back against the grain as he throws that pass to either of them or the late pull out the back, it's wickedly hard to defend.
Yes.
So if you're showing and you're showing and running with animation and intent as if you're going to get the ball, then that's all the defense sees. There's only so many so much of the picture that they can see. They just see a guy like Tig Furlong, you know, 20 stone, but he can shift and he's running back at your inside shoulder. You can't kind of play, oh, I'll play a bit soft here and see what's going on out the back. That's why you saw Leonard Brown a couple of times biting right in, shoulders in, and then whipped it out the back to Bundy, who was on to Gary, who drew in Reese, and then it was Conan around the corner in the first half, and then out to Conway and getting to the width.
Yeah.
Like, it was all such great stuff. because it was so well thought out and it was very simple, but everyone was waiting and ready for it.
And I presume if you do gamble, if you look at Furlong and you say, oh, I'm going to take a chance, Sexton has the ability last minute to spot that and fire it to Furlong and then catch you out. I mean, that's the beauty of Sexton. He can change his mind last second.
And he will, and he knows as well with the ball handling skills of the front row, in particular Furlong, that he can throw it to him. And the thing is, if you throw it to him, you run the wrap around him as well, because there's every chance he'll look for an offload if he gets through that collision. Yeah. You know, he's one of the better offloaders in the team. So, yeah, that is absolutely, they are thinking every time, this could be my time. And I don't think that they actually necessarily, I don't think they're pre-calling. I really don't. Right. I think they're just waiting to see it unfold and for Johnny to be able to see the picture. But I was really impressed at times where Johnny was out of the game, where he kind of went on the keep on going and then there was nothing down that side. So Hugo Keenan stepped in, first receiver, carried really well and square one time. Lowe came in when he saw Johnny in a ruck and just connected to that pod to get an extra little bit of width off the touchline. All these small little things just lends itself towards the team getting back into their shape. They tried to get to the middle a lot. As soon as you get to the middle, like I said, I've said many times, you slow the line speed down because you can't come off the mark as quickly with 4 and 5 players as you can with 8 and 9 players. And that's the reality of it. So to get to the middle and then to try and see what personnel are there, who's in the backfield, you know, what numbers are on the backs of the defenders. Are they, you know, flagging? Have they an injury? Are they, you know, struggling for breath? Is someone late getting up off the ground? All that stuff is put into the melting pot, into the Johnny Sexton computer and the Jameson Gibson Park computer and some of the other players. I don't think it's purely on them.
Yeah.
And then that allows them to make better decisions on what happens in the next phase.
So for Farrell and Cat, and I suppose increasingly Paul O'Connell, you suspect he's having a big role in there. But for Farrell and Cat, this is an amazing moment of almost redemption, because they were shipping a lot of criticism, a huge amount of criticism. And there was a sense that they had loosened the reins in a bid to play more heads up rugby. But actually, the attack was as blunt and lacked shape. And then the basics had become sloppier. And there was a real sense that there was a drift setting in. And now it's all come to fruition in a really impressive way. So that they held their nerve and didn't revert to a more conservative game plan and a bid to just get a few results and take the pressure off is massively impressive. And there's almost parallels with Stephen Kenny in some ways. So that's massively impressive. The other thing which I wanted to ask you about, which seems impressive, is that from seemingly looking in the Six Nations like defensively he just wasn't up to it, James Lowe was brought in from the cold. Nobody before the Japan game was saying, well, we're going to see James Lowe have a big November. Nobody was predicting that. And here he is. And secondly, Gibson Park. I can tell you, we talk scrum halves a lot. There's a lot of good scrum halves in Ireland. Generally, the common refrain from most people watching rugby is never Gibson Park has to be Ireland's number 9. And yet again, the coaching staff have seen something there which has worked. So let's talk Lowe and Gibson Park, because these are two really interesting Novembers for these two. That's kind of rubber stamped, certainly Gibson Park's inclusion going forward.
Yeah, it is. If you think about it, it's amazing because, you know, no one knew who Leinster's best scrum half was between Luke McGrath and him. And Lukey would be picked at times and then you know, Jameson be on the bench. And I can't remember over the course of the biggest games who gets the start, but you wouldn't guarantee it was one or the other. But yet I heard, you know, I kind of heard rumblings, even, you know, just as Jameson came into the fray and was eligible, that Andy Farrell was a big fan. I think he just felt as though he brought an extra dimension, and obviously the speed of service and you know, quickness of thought, doesn't overplay his hands. So we've seen the best of Jameson in the last couple of weeks. He's been really outstanding. He's been kind of the heartbeat of the tempo of this team. And this game plan absolutely is obviously suiting him as well. So I kind of felt as though I knew that sometimes coaches, you know, have favorites for whatever reason that they have. There's an element of the individual's game that they hang their hat on. And obviously he saw that capability in Gibson Park and it's come good, which I'm delighted for him, for both of them, Andy Farrell and Jameson, because you're right, they both shipped a fair bit of criticism in wondering, you know, what's the crack with, you know, between the two of them, and what's the crack with the, with how the game plan is evolving. The second thing is James Lowe, and you know, he's going to be in, you know, the new media dream, isn't he? Because the sound bites are going to be from the heart. They're going to be you know, cutting at times, and they're going to be bloody honest, because he said he went away after being dropped in during the Six Nations and worked so hard on this part of his game. And it was the bit that he struggled with, the anticipation, the reading, you know, when to come shoot in, when to close the space. I think he didn't really know exactly what he was doing previously, and that looked it because he was caught in no man's land a few times. Whereas on the back of, you know, defensive reads, even the one in the first half, Sevilla broke off a scrum and gave it to Will Jordan, who tried to, you know, shoot up the blind side, and Lowe, you know, closed the space down really quickly, got it, you know, a bit of a hit on him on the inside shoulder, and Doris then held him up for a maul to Ireland.
Yeah.
Those moments as well, not just about the Ione hit.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask about it beyond that. So the hit was great and it's a wonderful moment, but actually I was more looking out for, well, on the defensive line biting in when he shouldn't, or making a wrong read in general play. So I don't know, and is he totally out the woods there?
Yeah, even the Will Jordan try, I to be honest with you, I don't think he did a whole lot wrong there. You know, wingers are there to play quite high. I just think that's a class pass from, I think it was Havili might have thrown it.
Yeah.
And then a chip and chase, and it's a regather. Like those are moments that just, you know, moments of brilliance. And there's nothing you can defend. Sometimes you can't defend against that. Lowe had to worry about someone out the back as well. So it's not like he was super narrow, or he was playing ahead of, you know, his other defensive line. So I don't think there's anything, you know, amiss in that. But I just think he had, you know, where the moments where he had to step up and make tackles, he delivered that. And then we're very aware of what he's capable of doing with ball in hand. He brings a beautiful dimension to that back row, because Keenan and Conway, even though they pack bigger punches than their size, they're not big guys per se. He does bring that slightly different, unique aspect to their play, which makes, you know, if you were looking at a Keith Earls in there, or a Dave Carney, or someone smaller in there, there's a fragility from an aesthetic point of view, maybe, that you might go after there. Whereas that size aspect, that brute force, that ball carrying ability akin to, you know, any forward, is a real plus for him. It's just now that he's got the defensive side fixed, or certainly in the last couple of games, that he understands what he's at. There's a huge comfort that comes with that as well, that you're not carrying someone on one side of the ball, but yet, no, he's brilliant on the other side.
You're right about the interviews as well, post-match. So on the type of rugby Ireland played, we're playing the way rugby should be played. Tight shapes, connections out the back, boys wanting to be on the front foot, boys wanting to catch the ball on the line, little bit of footwork, get the hands free. We don't play negative footy like the stereotype South Africa. They're not playing the game the way it should be played when they win. We've got our own identity and it's great. You can just feel Andy Farrell with his head in his hands.
By the way, FYI, we have them in our group in the World Cup.
I was like, what are you doing? Shush, shush. James, no! James, don't! No! Someone jump on him. I know.
But you got to love that rawness. He's so enthusiastic, and obviously it really hurt him, you know, during, you know, the criticism's always going to hurt everybody, but it hurt him, you know, the question marks around his defense. So to have gone away and worked at it like you said he did, and I won't quote exactly what he said about the media in general.
Oh, but, no, I'm going there. Mate, that tackle.
Oh, you are going to?
Well, absolutely. This guy's amazing.
Okay, up you go. So. Well, on the I didn't know if I was allowed to use that word.
On the tackle, well, who knows? He uses it at least three times in interviews, so we can use it once. He said, okay. Mate, it was huge of the tackle. Then he's talking here about the media. What you bollocks has always wanted to get onto me about, I've been working on for the last 6 months. Hopefully you can abuse me for something else. I mean, I don't think the media at large have ever been called bollocks and felt so good about it. Just something damn charming about him.
If there really is, he'll totally get away with it, because I didn't actually see, I only saw the interview in print, but I'm sure he was having a smile about it while he's at it, as only he can. So I think everyone was thrilled for him. The, you know, the kind of the retribution, being able to bounce back and answer critics is a nice thing to do. And I think that's the world over, irrespective of who you are, that there'll always be doubts, you know, cast around your name. And it's when you come back and shine brighter than you did previously, it, you know, there's a huge thrill that comes with that.
Yeah. So just, I guess, one last point. And again, I mean, I feel like there's brilliant performances that we haven't really acknowledged. I mean, you briefly mentioned the front row. We hadn't touched on Henderson or Ryan and all the work they got through. Like, how have we not talked about Caelan Doris, really, do you know, given the performance? Yeah. You've touched on Van
der Veer. He was absolutely outstanding. I did feel as though, you know, he was, even before the try, take the try out of it, he was everywhere. He was cleaning up situations. He was, you know, clearing out rooks that needed to be won. He was, his ball handling is brilliant. His work rate. I just thought he was outstanding. He got through so much. And again, he's another guy that you kind of think on the face of it, comparatively to others, he's a bit on the, you know, on the lighter side potentially, but boy, he really, you know, he packs a serious punch, the way he carries, the way he runs, the intent he has, the desire he has in him. So yeah. it was lovely to watch. And it's a very, very soft try for New Zealand to concede, but great, you know, around the corner again. And we talk about the square carry. Watch that angle that he comes back at the inside shoulder, just as a Cody Taylor is coming around the corner, and as he tries to, you know, set himself, the momentum is shifted to the outside, and that's where Doris comes off his left foot, runs back at that inside shoulder, and he gets no collision on him, and then has the wheels to get in. So yeah, he was excellent. Conan was brilliant in you know, his carrying in close and wide. Kelleher was absolutely magnificent. Gary Ringrose, like I said, yeah. I thought he was outstanding. Hugo Keenan, geez, that guy's so good.
That was the first time he said it. It was amazing to play in a full stadium for the first time.
No way. Really? Hugo Keenan had never played?
Not for Ireland. Never for Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts. It feels like he's been here for a couple of years, doesn't it? It's the work rate. There was one time where they turned the ball over and he was in a ruck and there was a bad pass from Sevilla across Ritalik to Reese and it was thrown into the touchline. But I just watched Keenan from the corner of the screen and saw immediately the realization of the turnover and knowing his role that he was there to cover. And he looked out on his feet, but he still has this ability to go and go again, even when he's exhausted. Now, nothing came of that, but it was just, again, so much of the performance was around intent and hard graft and not taking the easy options. So they're the really pleasing aspects. You might take them for granted, but when you marry them with the very high skill level and the defensive, you know, capabilities and cleverness of the team, you get the type of performance that they churned out.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre. Sometimes you can't believe what you're about to say, but that scoreline flattered New Zealand, which is the extraordinary thing. Then the very, very, very last point. Johnny Sexton injured for 4 to 6 weeks, twisted knee and ankle. He will miss Leinster's Champions Cup games this side of Christmas, unfortunately. So it does mean Joey Carberry, Jack Hardy's been called into the squad, but Carberry will most likely, we would assume, start against Argentina. There were echoes of Chicago, I suppose, the way he came on and steered the game home, which must be very good for him. And this style of play should suit him down to the ground. This is made for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't wait to see more of him. I really can't. And he will get game time in the Six Nations, of that there's no doubt, because they really have to, you know, look at other options and give an opportunity to him. You know, it would be unfair on Joey Carberry to throw him in a big World Cup game with only another couple of internationals, two or three internationals from now till then, because he has to be allowed get comfortable with that type of setup, but not just in a controlled manner of training. He wants to be able to get it at full bore. So I'd anticipate, particularly with the pressure come off the victory against New Zealand, he'll obviously start this weekend. But I was delighted for him because there's been question marks around him as well, around, you know, whether he's going to return from the pre-injury Joey style and potential that he showed. But To come on and you know, we're not talking about his general game plan, but his goal kicking, to come on and kick that one from 50, even his first kick coming on, I don't care if it's in front, if you're a seasoned goal kicker, to come in off the bench and have to knock one over from right in front of the post, where the expectation is that you're, you know, there's a bit of, there's some butterflies in you, there's a bit of tremble going on, and it was fluid and it was seamless. Mm. And then the final one, you know, the nail in the coffin, you know, again, just took it for granted that it was going over. Yeah, they're ones that they knock over in their sleep. But I was really pleased for him, because it's been all Johnny Sexton and he's so far ahead of everybody else. But there will be life after Johnny Sexton, and a big part of it is probably going to be in Joey Carberry. And I would anticipate that he'll get lots of opportunities, or quite a few opportunities, from now to France 2023.
Yes. Listen, nice to have a wholly positive conversation about the Irish rugby team. It's been a couple of years. Brilliant analysis. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe. It was fun. Cheers.
Cheers. Brian O'Driscoll there. And by the way, we do want to send you to Ireland against Argentina this coming Sunday. So it's all with thanks to our rugby partner, Vodafone. Just tune in to Wednesday Night Rugby this week, day after tomorrow, to find out how you could win a set of 3 tickets to see Ireland take on the Pumas. So keep an eye out for that on Wednesday.
Brian O'Driscoll
on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.